everybody, welcome to episode 10 of Gamer Heroes. I am Derek, one of your weekly hosts, and I have my other weekly hosts with me, John.
Whoa, what's up?
And Zach.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, dude, good. That was, see, John, that was a normal greeting to say hello to people.
I gotta deliver to the fans, man. It's gotta be craziness on my end of the table here.
Crazy. I mean, for all I know, I mean, do we have any fans? I don't even know. We do have one review on iTunes.
I was gonna say, like, Jesse hooked us up, man. Jesse hooked us up.
That's right. But we have a guest this week. It is our first guest. We're 10 episodes in, and we decided to bring somebody in. So, Ryan, say hi.
Hi.
And, Ryan, what do you do?
I do another podcast called Screen Heroes. You may have heard it, just this little podcast on Heroes Podcast Network.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We're co-hosts.
I've only been doing it for like 17 years or something now.
It's
so
been a while.
Yeah. 100 episodes or something.
No, we're only at episode 61.
But together.
You and I have done other stuff.
Yeah, so we're almost at 100
at 100 episodes together.
Well, I'm glad you guys are buddies. So,
what do we do? Yeah, we are. Derek is a true friend.
So before we dive into things, though, Ryan, we wanted to bring Ryan on because this week we're talking about Overwatch. And if you don't know what Overwatch is, it's a first-person shooter by Blizzard. Go look it up. And Ryan is a big Overwatch player, specifically.
I'm the only competitive player in this little circle that we have here.
Wow.
I believe you. I didn't know if John was competitive.
Not for
or not.
He hasn't gotten high enough level yet, but I'm sure he will be once he gets high enough level.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'm not really into competitive play in video games much in general.
Yeah.
And I don't play Overwatch. I don't get to play it enough to really be competitive level. So, but we are going to be talking about Overwatch. We do have some news to discuss before we jump into things. The first one I kind of want to talk about is something called the All Controller, which is on is going to be on Kickstarter, and it is a controller that looks like an Xbox One controller or the Pro Controller for the Switch and the Wii U. Like the Steam controller, except that you can actually select a platform, and theoretically, you could use this same controller for essentially any gaming platform out there, from the PS4, Xbox One, to Android, Apple TV, drones, even the Switch. Do you guys think this is just a giant gimmick?
Zach,
it's like
you want to tackle this?
The universal remote of the future.
Okay.
Which is to say that it's not going to work particularly well, and it's not going to do any one thing particularly well. It's just going to be generally maybe not sucky.
Is the Steam controller not compatible with... I mean, it's just a USB controller, so I feel like it's probably compatible with at least Xbox and PS4. Xbox One and PS4.
I don't know, is it?
I don't know. I would assume it's just a USB controller, and it's designed to replicate a keyboard, so I mean, I imagine if you can plug a keyboard into it, then you can probably plug that controller into it, and it would work too. I don't know that it would work on the Switch, but...
Well, it's not going to work for drones,
and... I mean, it might. I'm sure any controller can work for a drone, as long as it has the right inputs. I've seen people use Xbox controllers on drones, and I've seen them use Xbox controllers on all kinds of things. I mean, I don't think it's as innovative as...
Yeah.
It's being plugged as. Plus, it's a Kickstarter. And
well, it is a Kickstarter.
Kickstarters, yeah. You know, they're cool, but...
So let me ask you this. So it's got like the images show it's got like a screen on it, and you can select what platform you want to do. So I assume that way maps all the buttons, right? So what... Just theoretically, let's just pretend for a minute that this is the real deal and it works as intended. What would you pay for something like that? What do you think is a fair
price? Not what it's going to cost, because any controller that has a screen seems to cost significantly more.
That's fair.
Than any other controller.
What about you guys? What would you pay if it worked the way it's intended?
I'd buy that for $1.
Wow. The negative Nancy today. I want to point something out just so you guys, just for everyone listening. So if you ask me, it's called the All Controller, which kind of reminds me of the All Spark, okay? And you know how it's a Transformer?
Oh, that's cute.
So I feel like that's what they were going for. So
this is the gaming controller prime.
It is the All Spark, you know? Because remember in the movie that glorious scene where it gets in contact with a Mountain Dew machine? Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about this controller. I think $50 is probably a fair price on a realistic standpoint. I think it'll be more than that just because of all the gimmicks, the screens, using the newest Bluetooth drivers. It'll probably be somewhere close to $80, to be honest with you. But $50 is my price point on it. I think it's kind of cool.
I would come in at $80. I think $80 is fair because the idea is for it to replace multiple controllers at the same time. And, you know, yeah, the Xbox ones are $60, $80 if you get them custom. Mm-hmm. And the Pro controller for the Switch is $70. So, all right. So, you know, if it comes in at $50, maybe it's worth it. I'm thinking with John, it's probably going
to
be $80.
Yeah,
so.
It's going to be $80 to $100. Yeah. Also, the Steam controller does work with the PS4, apparently, but it'll only recognize it as a PC or as a keyboard and mouse. It won't recognize it as a controller.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's like having a keyboard and mouse, but with less functionality because really you only have like five keys or something. Yeah.
Here's a really difficult to use keyboard and mouse. All right, well that's weird. So okay, good to know. So John, you said that there was something going on though with Sony and the PS4. What did they announce?
Yeah. Sony announced on Monday that they were going to start a new streaming service that actually included current gen PS4 games as well as legacy PS3 games. But here's the kicker: it'll be for PC. So it can actually be used on PC. It'll be like a Steam service, and they're going to be bumping up the library as well to compete with Xbox's new subscription library, the Game Pass.
When you say it runs on PC like Steam, you still have to own a PS4, right?
It's really vague. All they did was they announced it. They didn't give anybody really any specifics. So currently, I'll read it exactly word for word. It says, currently the service lets players stream legacy PlayStation games, PS Now at no cost, says that the new capabilities will be available for PC. There's not really any other details on that. They also haven't given us when. They gave us a price point, but they haven't given us when. So I imagine sometime this holiday season.
So that's interesting. I wonder, because like, you know, Microsoft has the cross-play for some of their stuff, but right. With Windows 10, you're using the same account on your Xbox One that you would use on your Windows 10 machine. So I understand how they can, from like a, you know, a rights perspective, DRM perspective, handle that. I don't know how Sony would do that.
It makes more sense for Xbox, in my opinion. I think that's a kind of a weird move for Sony. And they also said that they're going to discontinue some of the adding games to the PS Now service after this, PlayStation Now service, to focus more on developing this PlayStation 4 games for PC platform, which is kind of I think that's a step back, in my opinion. I think it's kind of weird that they announced this on Monday.
It seems like a mistake for Sony to try and fight Microsoft on their turf. Because, I mean, Sony can beat Microsoft in the console market, but I don't think they're going to beat Microsoft in the PC market.
The only thing I see that there are some A-plus, like, titles that people on PC would probably play. Like, Ryan, you're a hardcore PC gamer. You don't do much consoles, right?
No, there's, like, The Last of Us I would like to play.
I was going
to
say Last of Us, Uncharted, you'd probably
Uncharted play. I would play. And then there's some other one I saw a preview. Oh, the new one with the robots.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
I saw a preview for that. I thought it looked cool. Yeah, so, I mean, I would play some of that stuff.
Making that available is kind of a good idea, but that's four games we just listed, you know? So, I mean, is it worth $20 to you to get those games, Ryan?
$20 one time?
A month.
A subscription. Well, I mean, I would pay, you know, $20 for 2 or 3 months until I get through those games, and then I'd stop until another game came out that I wanted to play. It'd be like Netflix.
But $20 a month is double what Microsoft is charging for their service.
Right. I honestly don't understand what's Sony doing. What's their end game on this one? And then also,
I'd rather it be like Steam, where it's like you get to, you know, buy the games on the service and then you can just play them whenever you want. Because then I feel like at $20 a month, I'd be rushed to play through the games as quick as I could and then discontinue the service.
Well, right, man.
Take a while.
At $20 a month, you have 3 months to beat a standard AAA title.
Yeah, it's $60 for a game, brand new, but none of those games that I mentioned are brand new, other than Horizon Zero Dawn.
No, but, you know, if the service had been out when The Last of Us came out, you know, is all I meant there, but okay.
I think it's risky. That's all I wanted to point out, is I think it's going to be I don't know what the end game is, but I think it's a risky move for them, and it's probably going to fail. So,
yeah, I mean, I hesitate to call it risky because I'm just too confused by it. I think something's missing. So, all right, well, hey, Zach, why don't you fill us in on what's going on with the Switch?
Yeah. Let me...
Yeah, or totally looking it up, aren't you?
I got you, man. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, I can
got you, that man. Up.
So we have our first week numbers in for the Switch. It sold 1.5 million units in the first week across the globe, and 89% of people who bought the Switch bought Zelda. Which I'm only surprised the number's that low because I'm not sure what else you're buying. Right. If you bought the Switch on launch day.
Fast RMX. Fast RMX.
About the Super Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, if you shelled out $300 for a Switch so you could play 1-2 Switch or Bomberman alone, that surprises me. So, but those are some good numbers to kind of put that in perspective. For Microsoft and Sony, at their 2-week marks, we're at about 2 million and 2.1 million. With the PS4 at 2.1 million after 18 days. So, you know, it's kind of on pace. At this point, it'll really depend on stock and if there's enough for people to buy. It seems to be sold out everywhere, so they could stall at 1.5 million because there's nothing left to sell.
I want to talk about that for a second. The thing that really frustrates me about Nintendo is they kind of create their own demand by offering a short supply. It's kind of a weird thing, and they've always done this. Why do you think that is?
I mean, part of it is that rush of people wanting to go and get it because it won't be easy to get later. But I think another part of it is they don't estimate well. In this particular case, it's outselling the Wii U by a pretty strong margin. And they wanted 2 million units sold in March, and they hit 3/4 of that in the first week. So I'm not sure they anticipated the Switch to be this popular in March versus the Wii U that launched, you know, at a holiday time.
I disagree, because I felt like that little re-release they did of the NES was ridiculous. Like, I think the hype surrounding that was crazy for no reason, especially when you're locked in at 80 games.
30 games. It's only 30 games.
30 games, sorry.
And I didn't expect people, but the thing is, though, I'm with Nintendo on that one. I did not expect people to rush out and get that. I didn't rush out and get it. And I'm the biggest Nintendo fan I know. I mean, 30 games, short controller cables, there's really no flexibility to it. I have an NES, so it just didn't seem like something that the average person would want to run out and pick up. But there's people who camped out for it.
Well, I guess my point is that Nintendo's hot right now, and I feel like
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Judging by that, I feel like, and you should have seen this coming. I mean, if people are running out just to get your old classic system, I can't imagine what they're going to do to get your hybrid system. I don't know. That's just a telltale sign, in my opinion.
Well, but I mean, you have to remember the NES Classic came out in November. They only had 4 months, not even. They had 3.5 months to update production for the Switch. And that's not a lot of time in the grand scheme of things. To be able to increase production levels to any significant extent. The Switch is also, you know, we say it's $300, but, you know, you still have to buy a game, so now you're at $360. You know, if you buy the Pro Controller or an extra set of Joy-Cons, that's another $70 or $80. You know, if you get a stand for it, you get a screen protector, you get a case. I mean, you're spending $500. The NES Classic was $60, I think, $59.99, if I remember right.
It was. It was, you know, I thought that was too high, but... Yeah.
Well, it's $2 a game is what it is, right? And so you think, okay, people walk in on a random Tuesday and pick up the new game of the week for $60 on the PS4. $60 to a gamer isn't like a huge chunk of change. $500 to get yourself up and running on the Switch is a lot of money.
Right, so, but you can never get more games for that system. It's kind of...
No, I know, but for Christmas, you can get your kids for $60... A console that plays 30 games, you know, versus in March, you don't have a holiday and it's going to be $400 or $500 to get it up and running. Right. So it's a very different investment. So I did not expect the NES to be as popular as it was, but it is an easier investment. So, the only other thing I wanted to mention about Nintendo is for those of you who have a Switch, the Splatoon 2 Global Test Fire event is the weekend of March 24th, 5th, and 6th. There's very specific time frames for you to play those, so you're going to want to get out and check out those time frames. It's only an hour at a time. 2 hours on Friday, 3 hours on Saturday, and only 1 hour on Sunday. So if you want to play it, get out there. You can download the demo ahead of time. It has a pre-download for that. So
is there a reason for those limited timelines?
I assume the infrastructure is just not ready to handle...
It's a beta. They do it on PC all the time, right? Is that essentially what it is?
It's essentially... It's a very... I mean, I hesitate to call it a beta. It's more of an alpha.
When a PC game has an open beta, they do, like, a beta weekend, and then they test their servers, and realistically, the game is going to be down for at least half that time because their servers aren't going to be able to handle the load. I'm sure that's what they're doing with it. They're just trying to make sure that their infrastructure is there. They're going to get way more of a load during that hour than they will once they release the game and it's open all the time for people to play. So it really gets a... I'm sure that's what it is. It gets to test their servers and their capacity and see if it'll shut down their entire system or not.
No, that's my guess anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. This will be the Switch's first real online multiplayer test. Because while Fast RMX and Bomberman have some online play, the people aren't rushing out to pick up those games. Splatoon is other than Mario Kart 8, is the most successful game on the Wii U. It's a big deal that they're doing the sequel for the Switch. So, you know, I'm going to do my best to try and find some time to play this. It's going to be difficult to do because the times are kind of weird, but I'll try. It'll be nice to, you know, at least play it for free for a little bit since I never played the first one. So, before I go out and spend $60, you know. Alright, well, the only other thing in the news before we move on to our main topic that I did want to mention is the Project Scorpio page from Microsoft is officially up. The product page is up, it's available, there's a video, there's some basic information, and a sign-up email alert thing. And I just want to say that after our 2017 predictions last week, one of mine already came true, and that's that the Project Scorpio will be the first true 4K gaming console released on the market. So, unless Sony surprises us between now and the Scorpio's release, but I'd be shocked. Nothing.
We saw that coming. I mean, I feel like that. I wanted to kill the silence. That was what needed to be done, in my opinion. So, in order to be competitive, so that is expected.
Now, I know John and Ryan, you guys both played Fallout 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Zach, did you play?
Briefly. I mean, I loved Fallout 3. I played Fallout 4. I actually pre-ordered it and got like 10 hours in and then just never went back to it.
So I want to run this by you guys. In the video for the Scorpio, which is really just like a testimonial for a product that doesn't actually exist yet, they mentioned that they're bringing Fallout 4 to VR. And I want what would you guys feel about that?
Did they say for what like headset? Does Microsoft have their own?
Well, they have HoloLens. So I'm assuming that's what they mean, but they didn't specify.
When it comes to VR, I don't really pay attention to anything other than the Vive, because it's the only one with true motion control. And in my opinion, what's the point of playing VR?
With a controller?
Yeah, with a controller. It kind of ruins the whole experience. But the problem with Fallout 4 is there's so much movement, and you can't do, like in your living room. You'd be like doing that teleporting thing that they have to do when you have to cover large areas, and that would be really old. I think that game will be cool in VR, but playing it with a controller, I'm not interested in playing any VR game with a controller personally.
I want to watch you, like, tuck and roll in the middle of the living room to avoid that.
I've done crazier things. You should see me play laser tag.
That's apparently how VR works in movies and TV shows. So apparently you're just hiding behind your couch for cover. I don't know. Well,
you can't hide behind your couch for cover because your couch doesn't exist in the game, but you can, like, chuck down behind cover in the game.
Yeah.
This is an augmented reality, so...
It's just not there, man. I just think it's not there yet, VR. And stay tuned, check out our previous episodes. But VR is just not at the point where I think...
How so, though, Sean? Like, what part of VR isn't there?
Yeah,
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Exactly the controllers you're talking about specifically. And then the Vive is closer with having multiple cameras at different viewpoints, so it can actually sense not only motion, but it can basically, when you turn around and do a 360, it can still capture that motion behind.
Yeah,
you.
The motion control that I was talking about. Yeah, that's the Vive is the only one that has that.
Right.
I mean, VR is never going to be to the point where you can walk across an entire football field unless you have an entire football field to actually walk across, or unless they come up with like one of those giant things that is just like a
those
circle.
Treadmills? Those treadmills.
Yeah, and really I mean that's cool. I've played on one of those before, and it's. It's fine, but you can tell you're in it, so it feels weird.
You need a holodeck, like on Star Trek.
Yeah,
that's kind of where it's going, it seems like.
Yeah, someday, maybe, yeah. I mean, right now, I'm happy with the Vive and the teleportation method that they do. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like you can point and aim your light beam. It looks like a beam from God, wherever you want on the map, and click a button, and it teleports you to that location. Gotcha. That's how you move long distances in VR games if you don't have a large area to play in. And yeah, and that's going to be all we can do for a while, I imagine, with that. And I don't think an open world title like Fallout really lends itself well to something that's at that stage. So on that point, I guess I do agree with you on that, John.
I mean, especially considering that there's so many side quests and side missions and the inventory is so massive. I feel like it would be very clumsy.
There's also like one of the things that Overwatch, we're not talking about that yet. Fallout is that, you like get, your little towns that you can save. I forget what colonies or something like that is called. And once you save them and they're under your control and you can build and stuff in them, well, if you leave and go to a quest across the whole map, you can get a quest saying, hey, your thing is getting attacked. So then you have to go all the way back. So, you know, something like that where you constantly have to be moving, like, a huge map, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's just, like, I don't understand how some of the mechanics are going to work for VR. Like, there's so many buttons that do so many things, and there's so many... I don't know, like you said, little mechanics like that. Like, how are you going to work that all in some
fast
of those?
Travel. Apparently, you're going to be fast traveling everywhere.
No, but like, there's so many things that you can do. Like, I don't think it's there. I don't think it's going to be a good submersive, experience, to be honest with you. Like, I think it works okay in games where you're just kind of exploring stuff, looking at stuff. You're not really interacting. I don't in Fallout the whole game is very much about interaction, so I find that to be probably gimmicky. It's a gimmick. It's a sell. It's, well, if you liked Fallout 4, you'll love VR in Fallout 4. Like, no, that's not how it works. That's
fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Well, is there anything else, guys, in the news that you would like to cover dealing with video games?
Thank you for adding that last addendum. No.
Don't want to go on too many tangents, you know. All right, well then let's hit today's main topic, which is Overwatch. Blizzard, known for Warcraft and WoW and Heroes of the Storm, Diablo. And Diablo, Starcraft, also now has their, you know, new IP, which is Overwatch. Overwatch is a first-person shooter, much in the style of Wow.
Team Fortress.
Team Fortress 2.
Thank you. I didn't want to say Towerfall. I knew that was wrong. Team Fortress 2. Thank you. So we're going to talk about that, but specifically I want to start with the new character. Orisa, she's in PTR now, will be available to play publicly on March 21st. What do you guys think of Orisa?
Ryan has the most experience with her. So,
well, first, why don't we define who she is first? Why don't somebody tell the listeners a bit about Orisa as a character.
The listeners and Zach.
Okay. I will jump in here and do it. So in the story of Overwatch, basically a young girl wins a science fair for her work with, I think she was like 11, wins a science fair for her work with robotics. And she is getting ready to travel with her family, and the airport is attacked by a villain in the Overwatch universe, previously hinted at and referred to only in like the cinematics, called Doomfist. And
Terry Crews.
We hope so. We don't. That's not going to confirm Terry Crews' voice.
I know. Doomfist. I just love Terry Crews.
But he attacks, and in her hometown called Numbani, sees the destruction caused by Doomfist. It destroyed a bunch of their defense robots that they have in the town, and she decides that she's going to take pieces of their corpses and make a better robot, and that is where Orisa came from. Orisa is the guardian of Numbani in Overwatch.
So, basically, the way the little synopsis for her from the game is that Orisa serves as the central anchor of her team and defends her teammates from the front line with a protective barrier. She can attack from long range, fortify her own defenses, launch gravitation charges to slow and move enemies, and deploy a supercharger to boost the damage output of multiple allies at once. She is a tank. That is her class. And John and Ryan are the only two who've had an opportunity to play as her, so I'd like your guys' thoughts on this new character. How do you think she fits in?
I'll let Ryan. He's played with her a lot more than I have. He's put in his hours.
I actually have not played with her more than you have. I went to the test range and played, but checked out her abilities, and then I played one game with her, which is the exact same amount you played, as far as I know. So we both played the exact same amount of time with her.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I can dive in. It doesn't matter to me, but she doesn't really do anything special. Like everything she does is somebody else's ability. So she gets a weapon that's a lot like Bastion's gun. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with Bastion, Bastion has like a machine gun that shoots really fast. He's basically a turret.
Right.
A walking turret.
Yeah.
And she gets that, essentially. She gets a deployable shield that you basically aim, and it shoots out a shield that looks like a soccer goal mm-hmm. shape that your team can hide behind, and it's got like 900 hit points or 700 hit points, something like that.
That was something that I really noticed first, was that it would all look like variations of other people's abilities. So, like, that shield, it's like Reinhardt's shield.
It's more like Winston's shield. I mean, it's deployable wherever you want it to be, but it isn't a full sphere like Winston's shield.
Well, right, so it's always lesser, because you can't move it like you can with Reinhardt. It's not full coverage like it is with Winston.
Right.
So it's always like her abilities are slightly less than the other characters who already had them.
Right.
Right. And then you get your Graviton... I don't know, see it on
which
here.
Which doesn't really work that well.
It actually works really well once you get the hang of it. Like, it's just, it's a trick. I mean, I got to play with it on the test range before I played with it in the game, so I got to at least kind of see, like, the ranges and everything on it. Ahead of time, you didn't really get the opportunity to do that, so you just kind of dove in head first. If you have to kind of, like, shoot it really close to it. It's not like Zarya. Zarya is another hero in the game that her ultimate ability is that she can shoot out a big thing that pulls all the enemies in an area right to one single spot. And Orisa gets that same thing, but it's her alternate fire instead of being an ultimate, and it has a lot shorter range.
Gotcha.
When I use it, it worked pretty well. It just, you know, I'm used to Zarya's, which is a lot more range, so I could see it, if you didn't get a lot of time to mess with it, not like, you know, really feeling like it's powerful. I think it will be powerful. I think it will pull Bastion away if you shoot it close enough to Bastion, which right now Bastion's one of the strongest characters in the game due to some recent buffs.
Yeah.
So that will, I think, change up the meta a little bit for a competitive. But that's sure she stole that one from Zarya.
Right.
She does get one move that I guess is her own, which basically makes it so any movement impairing abilities completely don't work on her at all. So Zarya's Graviton thing, ultimate, May's freezing circle.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, you hit this, and it gives you basically immunity to any of those kind of impairments, movement impairing abilities. So that's kind of cool. Like, if a Reinhardt charges you when you're using it, then he just, like, bounces off and actually falls prone, like he does when you run into another Reinhardt.
Wow.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty cool one. And then she also gets a damage reduction ability, where for a few seconds she gets all damage cut in half, I think it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. So do you guys think that she is a positive addition to the tank class, or do you think that it's unnecessary?
I will take this one. I think it's going to be another D.Va situation, to be honest with you, where she is classified as a tank, but she doesn't really do tanky things. You know what I mean? She has a defense matrix, but it's not really useful enough to protect the team other than herself. So I kind of feel like Orisa takes all these abilities, but is never really good at one particular thing, and I don't think that she will be played as a tank. I think she'll be labeled a tank, but I don't think she'll be played as tank just like D.Va. Like, I play D.Va a lot, and I'll be honest with you, I never use her to power through. I use her to sit back while other people are powering through and just hose people down. But no, I think Orisa is very similar in that aspect. She's a very D.Va-esque character. So I think people who play D.Va, especially in my style, you know, not as a tank, more as a offensive player, will probably stick to that.
Well, I mean, isn't the whole point of a tank to soak up a lot of damage? Because, I mean, that's really what D.Va's good at.
Not really. Her defense matrix helps a lot, but...
She also has a giant health bar compared to...
Yeah, she has like 400 health and like 200 armor.
I mean, that's the difference between like her and like... The reason she's not offense like Tracer is. Tracer puts out more damage, but she's got more
like
speed.
Hit points.
She's got... Yeah, I think it's 150. But, she can't really take much of a hit. So, you know, offensive characters have to move quickly to deal their damage and that kind of thing. No, tanks are designed to soak up damage.
You're right on that point and that aspect, but there's how she's intended to be played and how people actually play her, and people don't actually play her that way.
If you're playing quick play, that's probably true. I think in competitive, she's used a lot more as a tank. Her defense matrix... I'm talking about D.Va here, not Orisa.
Yeah, D.Va.
Her defense matrix is one of the only moves in the game that can completely absorb any amount of damage pushed at her or at her team, period. There's no limit to the amount of damage. The limit is the time. But there's no limit on the damage she can absorb for her team, which is a pretty huge ability. And she also, you know, doesn't have to reload, so you can constantly, you know, just... to be throwing, not a lot of damage, but you can constantly be throwing bullets down, which is sometimes enough to keep enemies from pushing through a choke point.
She's the only character that doesn't have to reload, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's other characters that feel like they never have to reload, like Orisa is a good example of that. She has a 200-round clip. I think it's 200-round, so she has a ton.
Yeah,
she can almost constantly fire.
Clip.
Yeah, you almost never... And John, actually, when we were playing together, commented on that she has a huge magazine, so yeah.
That's definitely true with Bastion as well.
His is pretty big. His isn't even as big as Orisa's, though.
Oh, okay. I guess my question would be, based on the classes, the characters that we have today, do you think that adding Orisa as a tank class is where we needed more characters? Do you think that was a good addition, or do you think it was like a safe bet? Like, how do you feel about her addition from a dynamic perspective?
Me and Ryan actually talked about this. This is kind of a we were just playing her this weekend, and what Ryan mentioned was, and I'm not going to steal too much of your words, Ryan, but you said that this will help balance out teams. Why don't you elaborate on that?
Well, I think it will. I think that she has a place. I don't know that she was necessary, because again, she just is borrowing abilities from everybody else to a lesser extent. We didn't actually talk about her ultimate, but her ultimate basically does what Mercy's alternate fire does. So she puts down like a totem that's destroyable by the enemy, that anybody within eyesight of the totem gets a damage increase, basically right. Like what you get with Mercy. Which is a pretty powerful move. I mean, I feel I haven't done a lot of games with her on my team, because I played with her on PTR briefly. But that seems like it would be pretty powerful in certain situations. But I think that for her role, you know, you get, if you play the game a lot, especially competitively, then you know that on offense, you almost always want a Reinhardt. And on defense, really. I mean, you always need a Reinhardt. You need that shield. I think that her being an anchor tank, quote unquote, whatever they're calling it, she's more of an anchor tank than Reinhardt. What that means is basically she's anchoring to one spot and are keeping her team in one spot, which is what you want on like a control point map. Or even a 2CP map, or a payload map, anything that you can, so you want to keep the team, the opposing team, from moving forward. That's right. The whole point. With her shield is on a really short cooldown. She can constantly keep fire up and does more damage with it than D.Va. I think she has a place. I wish they would have come up with maybe a less tank, more defense character, personally, for the next one. I think that's what Doomfist is probably going to be. But, Yeah, I think she has a role. I just don't know how it'll actually affect the meta in the actual game. I think the other PTR changes will affect the meta more than adding her will.
Interesting. Interesting.
I want to say this, though. I will say, because she's new, it will force people to play tank, which will force other people to play other classes, at least for the first week. So we will have better, more balanced teams, I want to say. But,
well, constantly, which John and I did talk about, like, everybody, when there's a new hero release, this is actually my first new hero since I've been playing. Sombra was released shortly before I started playing, but when there's a new hero release, I can only imagine that it's going to be just like it was on the PTR, where right. you're really lucky if you got to pick her
yeah.
for a little while, because everybody's going to want to be trying her out.
Right.
Not everybody plays on the PTR. So, you know, even in competitive, you're going to always have that person, even on attack, wanting to play Orisa, and then you're going to have all the haters, you know, throwing the salt at the team.
That's encouraging people to be tanks, and then, so I can't be a tank, so I'll be someone else, you know? And I think that balances out the team a little bit.
It might. I mean, we'll have to see. It's going to encourage bad players to pick tanks, which isn't necessarily a help.
Because, I mean, the thing is, people who are super comfortable with a different class may not have any interest in trying her as a tank if they don't care to play a tank. You know, if you're already playing a tank, if that's your favorite class, then maybe you want to try her out just to see if she's a better tank. But if you're an offensive person, if you're a support person, you know, you may wait until the hype dies down.
I think if you're a DPS player, then and you're playing competitive and your team needs a tank, I think Orisa will be a good option for you, because she... kind of like John was talking about with D.Va, like, it's not uncommon to go into a game and have D.Va have the most eliminations of anybody. I mean, I did that just last week when John and I were playing. That's not uncommon. And I think that Orisa, her weapons are pretty powerful. You know, it's powerful enough to where she could be played similar to a DPS, and as long as the person is throwing out the shield mm-hmm. occasionally and using the ultimate, it would be I think she's going to be fairly easy to pick up on compared to, like, Sombra. Sombra is people still haven't figured Sombra out yet, so.
No, I definitely think that Sombra and Ana were both more difficult to play. I think they required a little more ingenuity. At least Ana, I think, requires a little...
They're definitely more nuanced,
yes, that's the word. That's the word. Nuanced, yes. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Orisa is a tank with a big gun and a shield. And I think that, you know, it's easier to understand how to use her. You might not be good at it, but you can comprehend
it. She does have a lot of abilities, so that might, you know, be difficult. People may not take advantage of all her abilities.
Right.
But I think that to be at least mildly effective, yeah. you could probably do that fairly easily.
I think it would be much easier to be bad as Ana, having to be a sniper healer.
Yeah.
She's hard. Ana's hard to play, in my opinion. I don't personally play those type of characters. If I'm ever a healer, I'm the best with Mercy, because I don't have to do anything but focus on healing. You know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, really, to play a Battle Mercy, you don't see Battle Mercies until you get, like, somebody that's played with Mercy for, like, 100 hours, because otherwise they're just not effective.
It's hard.
They're always more effective healing.
Yeah, she's not supposed to really be on offense, you know?
Yeah.
And
a lot of people give Mercy players a hard time because she is a very easy healer to pick up. She's really hard to play really well, because a really good Mercy player is going to use her pistol occasionally. Most people don't ever even know she has a pistol. They just, you know, and you can be effective as a healer that way, but you're not going to be effective as a well-rounded character doing that. And a lot of people give a hard time to players like that.
If you have to play a support and you've never played one of them before, she is easier to play than Lucio or Zenyatta, you know. Those are more complicated characters.
That's absolutely true.
And
again, more nuanced. There's a lot of, like, little things you have to do with those characters to be effective. And with Mercy, really, as long as you can hold the mouse button down or whatever controller trigger is, you know.
Yeah.
You're good.
I think you're totally right. Alright, so I think that's probably a good amount on Orisa. I know that we'll talk a little bit about some of the other stuff going on in the PTR here in a minute, but I just want to talk kind of in general a bit about the game and why, you know, you may or may not be super into it. So for me, for example, I love first-person shooters. GoldenEye, Halo, I love that stuff. Being able to play a first-person shooter that's as polished as you get with Blizzard is a real treat for me. I do miss, you know, that there's no campaign. I'm hoping that they bring that in at some point, because the characters are so rich that I really want to know more about it. But like Zach, for example, I know you haven't really had much of an opportunity to play Overwatch. Is there any reason that you haven't jumped on that yet?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, I think, last week or the week before, or maybe it was on the infamous Lost episode. for me, I love Blizzard and the games they put out. And for me, the biggest draw to Blizzard franchises is their stories and how they handle stories. And I know I've heard you and John talk about how there is a story. There's been reference to that tonight in the discussion. So I know there's a story in Overwatch, but for me, it's like I'd rather play a campaign on Warcraft 3 or play through Diablo 3 or some DLC. And I mean, even what kept me playing World of Warcraft for so long was I'd get sick of it, and then there'd be a new expansion, and I'd be like, oh shit, I gotta see what happens next. So, that was why I've never, that in time, I mean, so I only have so much time to play video games, so I'm constantly like, well, do I want to play this one? Do I want to play this one? So, yeah, for me, Overwatch, it sounds awesome. It sounds like a lot of fun. Everyone I talk to, it sounds like it's a really well-executed, enjoyable experience, but I just haven't had the overwhelming urge to get into it just yet, unless one of you can convince me tonight.
Well, we will see what we can do. I definitely understand the campaign part. You know, like I said, my favorite part about Halo is the story, is the campaign, you know, Master Chief and Cortana. I'm not a big multiplayer guy in the Halo world because, you know, I don't have the time to dedicate to those types of multiplayer experiences because I spread out my game time so much. John, what brought you into Overwatch? Because I know that wasn't really your thing initially, and now you're pretty into it.
You know, I guess I was afraid to pick up a new first-person shooter. At that time, I had been playing Battlefield 1, which I was enjoying. But now, I have to say this, now that I've played Overwatch, like, I can never go back to any type of first-person. It's just so, it's actual fun, you know. I think the appeal to me, for me, initially that kind of dragged me in was, you know, the true aspect of focusing on the team and what was created to, you know, to deter people from running and gunning and the cool abilities. Like there's a lot to really bring you in. Then later on you start expanding the universe and you're like, holy crap, there's stories and there's comics and there's things to catch up on these characters. And there's a lot to choose from character wise, classes wise. Like it's really exciting, honestly. I feel like for me last year, that was the best game that was released. That was my number one game of last year was Overwatch.
Yeah, it won some Game of the Year awards from various entertainment sites. That's definitely for sure. Now, Ryan, I know that early on when Overwatch was about to come out, you were trying out Battleborn.
I was interested in Battleborn, yeah, because I'm a fan of 2K games and some of the stuff that they've done in the past. Bioshock and Borderlands being the big ones. Battleborn, I think looked like an interesting game. It was like a MOBA in a first-person shooter body, but, I had the unfortunate, release timing of being about the same as Overwatch.
Like 3 weeks before.
Not being a Blizzard game.
Yeah.
So I think it was still pretty successful for what it was, but it's definitely not like Overwatch levels of success, so.
So what got you to give Overwatch a shot?
I mean, I wasn't really, I wanted to make sure the game was good, you know, before I wasted $60 on it. And sure. Then they did a free weekend back in December, and I was like, oh, what the heck, I'll give it a try. And tried it out, and it reminded me of when I first started playing Team Fortress 2, and I really loved that game, and Counter-Strike. I had I used to play Counter-Strike competitively, so I hadn't had a first-person shooter that I could play competitively in a long time. And so it just had a lot of appeal because of my love of Team Fortress 2, but also having a competitive aspect, because Counter-Strike was competitive, but it didn't have classes. It was basically, everybody had the exact same, you know, options for fire, for guns and stuff like that. You know, so that one came all down to skill. This one comes down to skill and also
team dynamic.
Team dynamic and your individual skill of the hero. And there's so many heroes, nobody's good at all the heroes. So,
no.
You know.
Yeah.
That I really liked it, and it's felt like a warm embrace ever since I started, you know, because it feels very familiar, and I think the Blizzard has done a good job with that with bringing gamers that are used to Team Fortress 2. They don't shy away from the fact that it's that it was based off and inspired by Team Fortress 2. So it does feel like a warm blanket for me because I loved TF2 and kind of gotten away from it when they started going crazy with hats and stuff like that. So
yeah, no, speaking of like the Team Fortress 2 part of it, like so I was lucky enough, and I really mean that honestly, lucky enough to be at BlizzCon the year that Overwatch was announced, which was a pretty big deal because it had been literally just ages since they had fresh IP, Blizzard, that is. And, you know, they showed the trailer, which if you haven't seen the trailer for Overwatch, the original trailer, go watch it. It basically looks like a little Pixar movie. And so, you know, they play, like, no announcement, no explanation, they just play this movie, and then the movie stops, and everyone's just kind of, like, silent. Nobody has any clue what's going on.
Are they making a movie?
You know? Right, yeah, right. Yeah. And so they come out on the stage, like, so I guess you're probably wondering what that was about, you know? they actually said straight up that, like, you know, a lot of you are probably, and then they show some gameplay stuff, and I know a lot of you are probably thinking, that looks like Team Fortress 2. And we agree with you. You know, like, they were not shy about it at all.
I mean, if Valve wanted to, they could have released the Team Fortress 3. I mean, they've had however many years that they've been producing content for TF2. They still produce updates for TF2 to this day. And, I mean, the game's been out for 10 years.
Long time.
I mean, it's been out for a while. So, you know, it feels like an homage to TF2, but also improves on in a lot of ways. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, it was the fact that it was Blizzard. And while I don't play literally everything Blizzard has, I don't really have time for MMO, so I barely played WoW ever. I think I ended up with like a level 12, I think was the highest I ever got. But you know, I played pretty much everything else they have, and so you know, the idea that they'd have another game that is a little more in my wheelhouse, that I was just really stoked about it, and I loved it from the get go. Even though they never let me in the beta, I forgive them and. I bought the game.
If I had applied, I would have gotten into it. So I get probably into every beta.
Seriously, man. It's like a joke. They actually have, if you go to BlizzCon after, like, for when there's a big release, like this kind of stuff, they have a sign at their information desk that says, don't ask about beta access. Because people use the fact that, like, well, I paid to go to BlizzCon, I should get beta access. And I understand that logic, but, you know, they can't just let everybody in who went to BlizzCon. That's not fair. So is there anything else then about the game itself, the lore, anything that you think people who don't really play it a lot should know? Like, let's sell Zach on this a little bit.
Why? I just did. Like, if I was going to say anything to sell it to anybody, I would, especially somebody that's obviously familiar with TF2, I would say that it feels like a more polished and more varied TF2 without a lot of crazy hats and stuff like that. I mean, it's getting constant updates at no cost like TF2 did. You pay a flat price for it and you get updates for free.
Yeah.
That's something I want to talk about with that. And we harp on that a lot, Ryan. I'm glad you mentioned that. We harp on a lot of games, especially EA, who sell you an incomplete game with hopes that, well, not hopes, well, basically twisting your arm that you'll pay to get more, to explore the rest of the game. I love what Blizzard has done, particularly, is they've gone a route. I mean, I've always been a Diablo fan, hands down, but they're totally different now. They're completely like, hey, we want you to enjoy the game. Everything is free. Here's something I also really like about it is the loot crates or loot boxes, are really cool. They're a little fun incentive that you get for.
Did you open yours yet, John?
I've opened all of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
For a while, John was like, I don't need any loot crates. I'm just gonna play the game. That's all I care about. And then he's like, whoa, what is that? I get that skin.
And it's free. All of those skins. Yeah. All of the skins.
Well, the loot boxes are not free.
They're random.
You get them at every time you they're random and you get them every time you level up. So yeah,
right.
So but that's like, pretty nice.
If you want a specific skin or you want a specific emote or something like that, most of them, if it's not from an event, you can purchase using in-game gold that you can earn. But what's important to stress, and I do think it's important to stress, that the loot boxes only provide cosmetic stuff. Yes,
that's what so I was getting at.
There's no pay-to-win kind of mentality here. It's, yeah, you might get a really cool skin or an emote or a line or something like that, but it's not going to make you a better player in the game. It doesn't give you more damage or more health or, you know, more stealth or something like that. It doesn't change the gameplay.
In addition to that, I like the leveling system. Is in Call of Duty, and that Call of Duty kind of set the standard for a lot of the first person shooters in the sense where leveling came in, and every level you get like a new gun or a new ability per se. You know, you're able to do something else. In this game, you get everything right off the bat. Level is really just, I mean, that's just a ranking thing.
It's bragging rights, and to enter competitive play, you have to at least hit 25.
I love it though. Like, that to me evens the playing field.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there.
Just to touch on something John said about the loot crates, I'm a Valve fanboy, so I'm just going to go out there and say that TF2 has had free loot crates for a long time. And that was, you can also buy that, or you have to buy keys to open the loot crates, but you do get free keys from time to time and things like that. But Valve has done all of that already, and they're obviously inspired by TF2 in that respect too, so...
Absolutely. But your arm's not twisted to buy those keys, though.
No. And they have trading in that game, so you can trade.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, for somebody that did buy keys, you can get crates.
And I mean, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, games do that in a different way. Star Trek Online, for example, the MMO has boxes that you have to buy keys for. But it's like, it's not cosmetic stuff. It's different ships and different weapons and different armor and things that could make you a better player, or things that you might sell and make you a lot of extra credits and things like that. So I like when it's cosmetic, because if you don't care, if you really don't care, good for you. You don't have to spend the $40 or the $60, depending on which version of the game you bought, and you're done. And if you want some cool stuff, yeah, go buy some loot boxes. I've bought a bunch of them when they have certain events, because I think they're fun. You know, I like the Olympic Games skins. I thought those were really good. So, you know, it just depends what you're into. Which, now we all play, all three of us, we play on PC. Though I did give it a shot on PS4 when they had one of their free weekends. I did think that it was a really positive, smooth experience. So if, you know, if the idea of PC gaming is a little overwhelming because you're a console gamer, I think it's really good on console as well. So I don't think that would be a problem for you.
Yeah, I mean, all the simple-minded console gamers will be able to just dive right in with no issues. If you want to play at a more elite level, then obviously PC is the way to go, because, you know, that's where all the elite players and gamers hang out.
So for those of you who aren't aware, PC gamers, who are dedicated PC gamers, tend to think
overly high
of themselves. You know, I like to spread the love. I own all the platforms. Yes. So, you know.
And you get how much time a week to play those
Not
platforms?
A whole lot, exactly. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with console gaming. Yeah. Some games are better on a certain platform than another platform. That's definitely true. But I think Overwatch is really great on console. Before we wrap things up, is there anything cool going on in PTR outside of Orisa?
There's a lot of interesting stuff, yeah. I mean, it's nothing, you know, really the size of a hero update. But we were talking about Ana earlier, who's like a sniper rifle healer. She's getting her rifle damage decreased, and the damage on her biotic grenade, which is a grenade you throw and it heals your allies and keeps your enemies from healing, they reduce the damage and the amount of healing that is done by her. Basically, the problem with Ana was that with a good player, she was a must-have in the top Grandmaster, like, level, top 500 players in competitive. There was no team that didn't have an Ana because she was so overly powerful as a healer with a good player. And so they did those changes to kind of level the playing field with the other healers. Junkrat. You know,
balancing can get really tough because at different skill levels, the balancing changes.
Well, she's such an advanced.
Right.
Like, we talked about earlier, you'll have to, like, I've played her, I've been playing shooters my whole life, and I struggle with her because she's very difficult to play well and extremely nuanced. So yeah, I think that'll make her less of a must pick and give the other healers a chance to step up. Junkrat no longer gets hurt from his own explosions, which is a pretty huge buff.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that change.
His ultimate before would kill him if he was in range, and now it does not. And his grenades, he can shoot somebody at point blank and blow them up, and he doesn't take any damage.
Yeah, that one bothers me. I think that the fact that he can get so many kills without seeing anything that's going on at all it just kind of bothered, rubbed me the wrong way to begin with. So now,
to be fair, D.Va can do the same thing, and, you know, people don't complain
only about with her ults. I'm not complaining about the ults. I'm talking about regular, just their
you're saying
their
just spamming grenades.
Yeah, just spamming grenades, I found, it just really rubs me the wrong way. It feels very, it's spammy. I think that's the right word. And so it's frustrating to play against. So to make that even easier for the character to do, it's frustrating. The ult thing doesn't bother me, because I think that's fair. Because if, you know, he does his ult and then just somebody happens to come around the corner at that very moment, like, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, but the normal weapon not doing any damage, that bothers me.
Well, D.Va doesn't get blown up by her own ult, so it makes sense that
right.
friendly fire wasn't on for your character,
yeah.
basically.
That's fair, yeah.
It is a huge Junkrat buff. John is a Junkrat main, I would say. He might argue that the Epos play D.Va a lot, but, you know, that's going to be a huge buff for him, so...
I'm excited for it personally. I do have to agree though, like his alt, it's a little ridiculous. Do you guys know how much time is really on that tire that he can drive that around?
He can drive it for like 20 seconds or something.
Yeah,
it's
a long
time. And he can jump over stuff with the tire.
Jump walls. Like, yeah. It's pretty ridiculous, but
I'm gonna be honest, I mean, didn't know there was a time. I thought it was just until it hit time, something.
Yeah. It runs out of gas or whatever.
Okay.
That yeah, sense, but I'm just saying it. 20 seconds is a long time. I've fallen off a ledge, came back around the stairs, and up, and still got people. Like, I mean, that's how much time you. Yeah.
Yeah, but to be fair, it can be shot down. But like, yeah. So like something like D.Va's ultimate cannot be. You can't shoot it to stop it.
I've shot Junkrat's ult before and stopped it.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating as a Junkrat. You see, like, the 5-kill, you know, play of the game getting ready to happen, and then you get shot down and whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
It happens a lot. It's very vulnerable, or you get killed while you're doing your ult. Like, that happens a lot to me.
But it doesn't end your ult when that happens.
No. I'm just saying, you're dead when you come back, though.
Yeah.
And it's kind of frustrating, but... kills your streak, whatever. It ends your streak, I should say. But no, I'm personally excited for that buff because I really do use Junkrat a lot. I my two top characters are D.Va and Junkrat. But you know, the whole Ana thing again. She's not my play style, but I think that'll be that'll gear the focus more towards being a healer. Stop trying to play defensively.
Yeah, exactly.
Offensively.
Yeah, because that's another problem. She did so much damage.
Right.
Like, when you're talking against an enemy Pharah, who, if you don't know who Pharah is, she has a jetpack and flies in the air and shoots rockets down on people. There's a certain, like, maybe two heroes that are really good at taking her down. Well, Ana was one of them, but she should not be doing that.
She's a support, yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is going to take some of the focus off of that, which I think is good. But that is also kind of an unintentional buff to Pharah. Because it makes her easy. She can survive easier now because she doesn't have to worry about them shooting her as much. Orisa actually got a couple changes on there. Her magazine size, I said earlier, was 200. They actually dropped that to 150, and they increased the cost for ultimate. Sombra, this is a big joke among people that are in like the Overwatch groups on Facebook and everything, is that she does like a stealth thing where she goes invisible, but you could hear her coming like a mile away. So they reduced the distance that you could hear her going in and out of stealth. And they also reduced the cooldown on her translocator, which is like a beacon that she can throw and teleport to.
Yeah.
Winston got a pretty huge buff. He can now when he throws down a shield, the cooldown starts when he throws down the shield instead of after the shield is blown up.
That's a huge change.
That's a very big buff. And I think it'll make him much more viable. Oh, won't be able to Ryan every time.
It makes sense. I think it's a good decision. So,
Zenyatta got a decent buff. He can, or he has less of a spread on his Orb of Destruction now, which is a secondary fire where he like charges up these orbs and shoots like 10 of them out. It's not a heavily used ability, but it does make that a little bit better. They did have a thing where you could target with the Discord orb through shields. Discord orb makes people take more damage, essentially, if you're not
that one. I don't like that it can go through.
That
shields.
Was a pretty huge buff. They did revert that.
Okay.
They also made Sombra her hacked health packs. You can hack health packs of Sombra, and it basically like lets it recharge faster for your team.
And the other teams can't use it.
And the other teams can't use it anymore. And also, when you use a hacked health pack, it gives Sombra a huge boost for her ultimate. She gets like 5 or 10% every time it's used, so it's a lot. So that'll help. She can, you can now see these through walls, so you can see where the hacked bits are.
That's interesting.
So yeah, they've done a few changes, and I'm betting most of those changes are going to go live on Tuesday. Cool. I guess we'll see.
We will find out. All right, well, I think that's probably going to be it then for us this week. We are at our hour mark, which is where we want it to be, but we've been over the last couple of weeks. Zach, you know, we'll do our best to find a better topic for you, buddy, for next week.
Hey, no, this has been enjoyable. I have learned a lot. I mean, I still won't have magically time to play this game, but it does, it confirms everything that I'd heard about it before.
Fair enough. So guys, don't forget, you can find us at heroespodcast.com. There's a big button there to go to our iTunes page, drop us a review. When we get to 10 reviews, we're giving away a video game. All right. free stuff, free video game, for consoles. We did a Steam game for our previous contest. So this one's going to be for consoles. So, when we get to 10 reviews, we're going to do a random drawing from those initial people. So go out there, review. We will be back next week. So stay tuned. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.
11.